Thank you for the introduction. So I'm Tatsuya Harada of the University of Tokyo. The title of my talk is Visual Recognition and Generalization. So as we know, a massive amount of multimedia data is uploaded at the moment. Okay, so this graph shows the how many photos are uploaded to the Flickr. 586 million photos uploaded to the Flickr in 2013. For the video data, so 100 hours of video are uploaded to the YouTube every minute. This stats are very also, I think, more and more video data are uploaded to the YouTube now. So it is natural to use a massive amount of multimedia data to create an intelligent system to recognize a real world environment. Video recognition is one of the important tasks for the multimedia data processing. And action recognition is one of the major tasks in the video recognition. This figure shows the UCF-101 dataset. This is a de facto standard action recognition dataset. This dataset includes 101 kinds of daily actions. And these three videos are examples from the UCF-101 dataset. So we can see those data has a wide variety. It's very challenging to recognize daily actions. To attack this problem, so we have proposed a new descriptor, which is called a cross-stream descriptor. This actish represents a cross-stream descriptor. This actish have the special compression layer and temporal compression layer. Input of the spatial compression layer is RGB data from the video. And the input of the temporal compression layer is optical flow extracted from the video data. Then we obtain the four kinds of mid-level descriptors. One is from the spatial compression layer, and the second one is from the temporal compression layer. The third one is from the spatial compression layer weighted by the temporal weight map, and the fourth is from the temporal compression layer weighted by the spatial weight map. Then those mid-level descriptors are pulled around the trajectory. So the trajectory is extracted from the using the improved dense trajectory. Then we obtain the final four kinds of descriptors. So those four descriptors are fit into the conventional coding system. Like blood and Fisher vector, then we obtain the final representation of the full video. This descriptor is not bad, so because the for the UCF-101 dataset, we got the best result when we submit the paper to the Asian Multimedia 6 months ago. So we tried the interesting application of the action recognition. We have developed the daily action recognition system with a wrist-mounted camera. This is a wrist-mounted camera, and this is a head-mounted camera as a baseline system. The left video is captured from the wrist-mounted camera, and the right video is captured from the head-mounted camera. To recognize daily action, so it is important to recognize a handheld object. For example, so if we were cooking, we use the knife and the cabbage, onion, beef, and et cetera. So the system can detect the series of handheld objects. The system can recognize cooking action. Well, from this video, so the handheld object clearly captured from the wrist-mounted camera. To attack this problem, so we have developed the discriminative spatial temporal aggregated descriptor. Handheld object appeared in the center of the image. So this means that image from the wrist-mounted camera has a strong spatial bias. So we propose a new descriptor to take advantage of the strong spatial bias and weak temporal bias. So we first divide the video data into the spatial temporal pyramid. Then we extract the compression neural feature from the each cell, and we assign the weights for the each cell in the special temporal pyramid. Then we obtain the final descriptor by calculating the weighted sum of the cell features. Weights in the special temporal pyramid won't be a supervised way. So this slide shows the example results of our system. Left is from the wrist mount camera, and the right is from the head mount camera as the baseline system. The first action is reading a book. The subject changed to the action to probably to grab the scissors and the cutting paper. And the left system outputs the cutting paper, and the right system doesn't. So we can see that the recognition system with a wrist mount camera is more robust than the head mounted camera. And this is using the stapler. And the next action is to start the cleaning using the vacuum. Okay, so this is using the vacuum and the start cleaning. Okay. So next topic is a narration generation from the video. So this is an input video. So this video seems a little bit strange. But so if we input this video into our system, so our system outputs a narration like this. Okay. A man is holding a box on us. Then he and she, he and a woman are standing next to each other. Then she is holding up food. Okay. Our system is very simple. So first, we segment this video into the some segments, and those segments fit into the standard caption generation system using the LSTM. So we have the, some captions from the one video. However, the simple concatenation of the captions is not good because each caption is generated independently. So there's no contextual relevance among the captions. So we use a simple natural language processing scheme to connect those sentences smoothly. Okay, vision community, so attacking more interesting and challenging problem, combining the natural language processing and video processing, image processing. Visual question answering is one of the those tasks. The visual question answering is that given an image, and a natural language question about the image, the task is to provide accurate natural language answers. So if we input this image and the relevant questions, what color are her eyes, what is a mustache made of, the intelligence system have to answer for the first question, the black, and the second question is banana. So right example is more difficult. How many slices of pizza are there? Is this a vegetarian pizza? So I can this answer. To attack this problem, so we have developed the DualNet, a new architecture. So first step of the DualNet is to project the image feature and the question feature into the common space. The second step of the DualNet is to fuse those image feature and the question features using the element-wise multiplication and the summation. The third step is concatenating those features, and this feature is fit into the fully connected layer and output the answer about the visual question. This slide shows some example from the VQA challenge, which is took place in the CBPR this year. So for all this example, so the question is, are the animals alive? Our system answered no, so this is good. This is a second example. So second question is, what airline owns a plane? Our system answered United. This is good. But those are bad example. So this for this example, the question is, what is behind Mars? Our system answered the parking meter. It's not good. Because you can see there is a car behind the man. So the correct answer is car. So this question is also the difficult. And the question is, how many knobs are on the microwave? So the system answered 6. But the correct answer is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Very difficult.
Okay? So we are also attacking the intrinsic problem for the visual recognition data set. To construct a visual recognition data set, we usually use a crowdsourcing. So we ask the annotator, what is this image? Okay? So the annotator answers, this is dog and this is a chair. It seems perfect. Then this image assigned a dog and a chair level. But you see, so there is a sofa and the carpet are there. So the carpet and the sofa labels are absent. So if we want to construct the sofa classifier, so this data decreases the accuracy of the sofa classifier. So because we treat this data as a negative data. Okay? So we want to understand that the obtained data set has a property by which the assigned labels are definitely positive and the absent labels are not necessarily negative. Okay? And the multi-level problem is an intrinsic problem in the visual recognition system. So those data are from the real image recognition data set. For this data, the cat, wall, and house are assigned. But we can see there's a tree. The three levels are absent. Okay? For this image, so bed, TV, room are assigned, but the pillow and the curtain and the carpet, those are absent labels. So this problem is called the PU classification problem. For the binary PU classification problem, Sugiyama group has attacked this problem, and we extended this binary class PU classification problem to the multi-level setting. So this figure shows the illustration of the PU classification problem. And this yellow circle indicates that the positive data, and the white square indicates the unravel pattern. So we can see that the unravel data includes the positive data. So the resultant classifier have the strong bias because the unravel data has positive samples. Okay. How to cancel the bias? Strong bias is a very challenging problem. So we analyze theoretical analysis of this problem in the CBPR paper. So we conclude that some conditions to cancel this bias. One condition is to use a symmetric surrogate loss to cancel the bias. So this this condition is almost similar to the binary PU classification problem, but we generalize this problem to the multi-level setting. So for example, so we usually use hinge loss to construct a classifier, but this is not good. So the lump loss and the sigmoid loss are preferable because those losses are symmetric surrogate loss. Okay, so to recognize visual data, so we have to install the many softwares and many libraries. So, but this is very, very annoying. So, because many libraries are not independent, they are dependent. So, we are now developing the distributed machine learning framework using JavaScript. Thanks to the power of JavaScript, there is no need to install any software to the machine learning algorithm on the laptop computer or workstation or the server. This software is run on any operating system. So so if you write one code, this code is can be run on the Windows, Linux, OS X, and Android, or the iPhones. Okay? So I'll show you one demonstration about the distributed machine learning framework. Okay? So okay, this is our GitHub and access to this URL. And this system starts to download the data set, which is Emmy's data set, a very, very famous handwritten recognition data set. And start 16,000 of training image and 10,000 validation image. Then the system starts to run the convolutional neural network using the Emmy's. So please wait, it takes a bit time. So you can see this system so start to run the convolutional neural network. You can see the error rate is now decreasing. So this system successfully start to run the convolutional neural network. So this software is run on the my laptop computer, but if you have the smartphone, the iPhones, you can access that URL. So you can run the, your own convolutional neural network on your smartphone. Yeah, but the problem is a speed issue. So JavaScript is very slow. So we are now tuning the JavaScript-based machine learning framework. Caffe is a very famous deep learning framework. So this is implemented, this is a native implementation. This is upper bound speed. So current system is just 1.5 slower than the native implementation. So we can say that our system is almost comparable to the native implementation. For now, so we, I explained how to convert the image and the video into the labels and the natural language. Okay, so this process can be considered as a semantic compression. So, we, if we read a book and the stories, we can imagine the characters and the scene in my brain. Okay, so this process is considered as a creative generation process. So I think the building the creative intelligence is in machine is more challenging than the semantic compression. So we have tackled this problem from the 10 years ago. So we have developed the Janus robot system. And Janus robot system so moves about in the physical world and find news-like events, recognize the scene and the object, they interview with people, and finally generate the outcome. Okay? The Janus robot is a grand challenge of the intelligent robot because this robot has many difficult and challenging tasks like object detection, object recognition, the scene recognition, and the caption generation, and the SRAM, and et cetera. So this slide shows the demonstration of the Janus robot system. The robot automatically crawls the real world and find the anomaly event. So because this system has anomaly detection ability, so the robot approaches to the anomaly event and then take a picture at the highest anomaly score. Then the robot starts to find the person to ask the question. What is this event? Then the robot approaching to the person, the excuse me, do you have time? Some time? And the robot puts the mic to the person, okay? The I found something strange here. Do you know what was happened? And someone has preparing the presentation, the next conference. It sounds interesting. And it is about the autonomous robot that breaks the news. And thank you for sparing your time. Okay, the combining the interview and the picture captured automatically from Janus robot. The Janus robot can generate the article like this. The heading in the part is strengthening. We can say the practicing poster session for the coming conference. It is about the robot finding news. Okay. And so we found the content generation is very important task. So. Caption generation and the image generation is a very common task in the deep learning era, but we started this project from the early 2010 to before the deep learning era. So we are now so attacking the more difficult problem like video generation from the semantic information. So to conclude, so we present current progress in our team, and thank you very much.
Okay, good afternoon. Thanks, Jingdong, for the introduction and Microsoft for inviting me. It's a great honor to be here. In the next 20 minutes, I will talk about video content recognition, in particular video categorization, with a focus on some recent deep learning approaches developed in my group. And this is joint work with many students and colleagues at Fudan University and also in other places like Columbia University. early in the morning, there is a session about video, three wonderful talks, and people have already mentioned a couple of times that the video is the biggest big data in this big data year. And I would like to start with some numbers in the report from Cisco to just give you an impression of how big the video data is. First, it would take an individual more than 5 million years to watch the amount of video that will across the global IP network each month in 2019, this expectation. And second, globally IP video traffic will be 80% of all the IP traffic by 2019, up from 67% in 2014. So the current, I think the current stage should be around 70%. So not only the amount of video data, but also the popularity. Videos are basically everywhere. We watch news in the form of videos, entertainment, and we work with a lot of video also. So to make full use of this video data, there's a strong need of good content recognition, content analysis techniques. And this is the outline of the talk. Since data sets are pretty important for algorithm research, so I would start from the data set part to go through some popular data sets in this area. And after that, I will introduce some of works on deep learning methods for video analysis. And this table gives a list of, well, it's a partial list of popular data sets for video content recognition. As you can see, some early data sets are pretty small, like dating back around 10 years ago, the Kodak data set contains only 1,300 videos. A good trend is that if you look at the years of those data sets being released, in the past 2 or 3 years, there have been more and more data sets being released. So people have been already realized that there is a lack of good data sets in this field. Let me briefly introduce a few of them. One of them that I wanted to mention a little bit is the Tuomas challenge. I was involved in this effort, started in 2013. We organized a challenge at ICCV. It's an action recognition challenge containing 101 categories. And the data set contains around 20,000 of internet videos, as I mentioned, 101 classes. The effort started in 2013. It continued until 2015, and this year we didn't continue because of the limited amount of resources. Each year there were around 10 to 20 teams participated in this challenge, running their algorithms, their best algorithms on this data set and compare their results. And we organized a workshop at this top vision conferences in those 3 years. And the data set has become a benchmark for action recognition in the field already. And the second data set I wanted to mention is the Fudan Colombia video data set. Probably a few of you already noticed this data set. We released early last year. It is, I think it's currently still one of the largest public benchmarks of internet videos with manual annotations. As many of you probably know, Google released a very large data set, like the most recent 8 million data set, but that one does not contain manual annotation. And this Fudan Colombia video data set contains 239 categories organized in a hierarchical structure. It's already been requested by nearly 100 organizations. And this is a part of the hierarchy, just to give you an impression of those contents being annotated in this data set. It's one third of the hierarchy. Among the 239 categories, 46 are sports related and 17 are music related, 21 DIY related categories. And this is another part of the hierarchy, 10 categories related to beauty and fashion, 30 categories related to cooking and health, and leisure and tricks, and et cetera. And this is the last part. The largest group of categories in this data set is everyday life. Some of them are related to kids playing different kinds of things, and nature, travel, etc. And this is just for example videos of one class in this data set, kids playing blocks in our hierarchy under kids and under everyday life. So just to give you an impression of the videos in this data set. Another data set recently released, not by us, by Colombia under, I believe it's under the support by the IARPA Aladdin program contains also around 90,000 videos of 500 purely focused on events. They define the events based on the WikiHow and annotate 500 categories in internet videos. If you're interested, you can check this data set on the internet. Okay, now let's take a look at the recognition approaches. Before introducing our approaches, let me briefly review a few extremely popular methods, I think, in this area. Many state-of-the-art video classification approaches still rely heavily on this so-called dense trajectory features. The features are normally used jointly with some feature encoding methods like this feature vectors or some normalization method like power norm or L2 norm for the video level feature representation, and in the end with a classifier to classify the features into semantic categories. And recently, because of the success of the deep network in image domain, people started to use deep learning for video analysis, but with limited performance gain, I would say. The earliest way is to directly apply image-based convolutional neural network features on those video frames and use the average the features over multiple frames from a single video as a video level representation for classification. And this is the framework we published in ACM Multimedia 2014. So the work was done like 3 years ago because the work was done mostly in 2013. As you can see in this framework, 3 years ago, we still rely heavily on traditional features like the dense trajectory. So from video data, we extract the dense trajectory features and audio features. And then we employ a deep network, except just a four-layer neural network, on top of those traditional handcrafted features for classification. Because at the moment, I think we in this community, we still didn't see any very good deep learning-based methods, just purely end-to-end deep learning methods for video analysis. And the main contribution of this work is to explore this feature and class relationships in this classification process. So in our formulation, we propose to impose regularizations in this network training process to explore the feature relationships in the feature fusion process, because in video there are many features, and also employ similar form of regularization in the classification phase to explore class relationships, because in a single video, we're not recognizing just one single class. We're recognizing many different classes. Some of them are related semantically, for example. So because of the time constraint, I will not go into the details of the technical methods. Let me show you some results. First, let's take a look at the effect of a feature relationship part. On this Hollywood 2 dataset and the Columbia consumer video datasets, and the last one is expanded a little bit larger than the CCV dataset, than the second one. It's based on the second one with more categories. So by using this feature relationships, we can very stably improve a few percent on all the three datasets. So that means there's some underlying feature relationships in this video domain. But it's very difficult to explain very explicit way, but there could be some relationship between, for example, in the audio track, features in the audio track and features in the visual track. And for similar performance gains were also observed from using the class relationships. This table shows the results on this the same set of three data sets. The bottom row is the results from using this neural network-based method with regularization compared with a few alternative methods. So also on the three data sets, we obtain very stable performance gains by using regularization in the network training. And probably one of the most representative works on deep learning for video categorization is the two-stream CNN approach, not done by my group, but by people in Oxford University. Their idea is actually very simple. Published in 2014, just a two stream of this convolutional neural networks, and the top stream is exactly the same with those image-based deep learning method. they basically track some video frames from the video and apply convolutional neural networks for classification. And the difference is in the second stream, in the bottom stream, they compute a so-called stacked optical flow image based on basically the motion characteristics between video frames, and then apply very similar form of convolutional neural networks on this optical flow image to capture the motion features in the video. And in the end, they use very simple score fusion method to combine the output of this frame-based CNN network and also the optical flow-based CNN network. And inspired by this two-stream CNN approach, in 2015, we proposed a hybrid deep learning framework published in ACM Multimedia. In this framework, in addition to the two-stream idea, the static frame part and also the local motion part, we also include the so-called long-term temporary information captured by the STM network. It's a type of the RN network to capture this long-term temporal information in videos. So by combining both static, local motion, and also the long-term temporal information, we could obtain improved results with some certain fusion methods. Let's see some results. On the UCF-101 dataset and CCV dataset, we achieved the best performance by the time of publication. There are better results being reported this year and later last year also. And this work is actually the first work reporting results higher than 90% on this very challenging UCF-101 data set. Let me also briefly introduce a few more recent works. And this is a recent work published in ACM Multimedia 2016, just 2 months or 1 month ago. We improved a little bit over last year's framework by using three common nets. So in the last year's framework, we used two common nets based on the static frames and the optical flow. And this year, we use another common net on this so-called audio spectrogram images. We convert audio into image, and then we can apply CNN network for this video categorization. And on top of the frame level features and the optical flow level features, we also apply a STM network to capture this long-term temporal information. And in the end, because we have multiple streams of networks, we developed a module called Adaptive Fusion to select different type of networks out to give different weights over different streams for video categorization, because different classes may emphasize on different types of features. Let me show you some results. This table shows the results of those individual frames and also the combination of multiple frames. In the bottom row is the combination of the multiple frames. So by combining all the streams, the results can be greatly improved. For UCF-101, 90.3%, for CCV, 82.4%, which are considered as good results. But let me show you the adaptive fusion. So this is the average fusion in the bottom row, average fusion of the streams. And adaptive fusion can offer better results. So we improve to 92.6% on UCF-101, which is currently, I think, still one of the best results on this data set. And this figure shows the per category results on this CCV data set, 20 categories. As you can see, the purple results are the fusion results for each of the 20 categories. So fusion of multiple streams can always improve the results, very stable improvement over all the categories. And these tables compare our results with some state-of-the-art methods. I'm not going to introduce each of them. And another recent work we did was to use object and scene recognition results for video understanding. Basically, let me show you this video first. So it's very easy to understand. This is American football, this video. This is a high-level event contained in this video. And the question that we wanted to answer in this work is that once you have imperfect detectors, unreliable. I mean, it's not 99%. It's maybe just 50 or 60% detectors for some objects and for some scenes in the video data. Can we use the detection results of those objects and scenes for higher level event recognition? And this is the framework we used. So we first detect thousands of categories of objects, and a few hundreds of scenes in video data. And based on the detection results, we use another network to incorporate this semantic outputs on object and scene level for event level prediction. So for the event level prediction, it's basically a classification process. And the byproduct of this network training, because the input of the network has semantic meanings, each node of the input is the output of an object on a scene classifier. So the input has semantic meaning and output also has semantic meaning. So a byproduct is the relationships between object and scenes and events. And based on the relationships, we can actually also perform zero-shot learning because we know the relationships of those semantics. Let me quickly show you some results of this work. This table, the green with the three rows with green background are the individual stream results. F stream means the original feature, raw feature extracted by convolutional neural networks from videos. O stream means the results based on the objects, object semantics, and S stream means the results based on the scene semantics. And the bottom row is the combination, is the fusion of results based on object, scene, and the original raw video features. So the combination of them is the best, and also object and scene based recognition is also very effective. Next, let me show you a quick demo of the work. It's not a real application system, it's just to show you some of our results. So we developed a demo based on the supporting two kinds of search queries. One is text-based query. All the videos in this demo system does not contain any textual annotations by human. So those annotations are all based on machine. We recognize 239, based on the Fudan Columbia data set, we recognize 239 categories in this video data. And after that, people can input any textual queries. We match that textual query with the recognized semantics. Even though sometimes the people, the input from the human may not be exact match with the 239 categories, we can use semantic relatedness to support that search. And this is the results of query Beach. And another form of query we support in this system is you can also input a video. And the system can very quickly recognize the contents of the video in just a few seconds. So the video may be 5 minutes or 10 minutes long, but we only need a few seconds to recognize the contents. For example, in this video, the category receiving the highest probability is swimming amateur. And based on that, you can do search, you can do other kind of applications. Okay, I'll conclude with a brief discussion about future directions in this exciting field. I think one of the important future directions is to develop better networks for video analysis. So over the years, we have seen convolutional neural networks for image categorization, which is very effective. And in 2014, we have seen the two-stream CNN for video analysis. And in the recent 1 or 2 years, we have seen many works on video analysis with different kind of networks. But it's mostly a combination of those existing ones, like a combination of CNN and RNN for video analysis. We don't know which one is the ultimate solution. Maybe there could be some better ones to be developed in the next couple of years. So it's very interesting and worthwhile to pursue in this direction, to develop a better network, particularly tailored for video analysis. And another direction is better data set, because even if you have a very good idea for a very good network that may be suitable for video analysis, you need a very good set of training data. But in the video domain, actually, there is very limited amount of training data. For image domain, there is ImageNet, so that helps a lot in the development of CNN for image categorization. But for video domain, we only have this kind of data set. Even this most recent data set from Google or from Columbia, just video level labels, just single label for each of the video. So we don't know where is the semantic really happened, I mean, temporally or spatially. So it's very, I think it's very critical to have those kind of data set to have very fine-grained labels that will help the development of models a lot. Okay, and this is the list of references for the talk. Thank you very much.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Nice to meet you all. In this talk, I'd like to talk about image deconvolution using very deep convolution neural networks. Okay. Actually, I'll introduce two recent our works regarding this topic, published in this CBPR 2016. All right. Let me first briefly introduce the problem. Okay, I have a degraded image, okay? Then I want to make my image look better or restore to the original one, okay? So this problem is a well-known problem and it can be casted into the several terms like the image enhancement, restoration, and deconvolution. Okay, so most cases, the fourth process can be modeled in terms of convolution, right? Convolution on process. So the recovering problem becomes the deconvolution. Okay, so for example, so if you have a very small image like this, then I'd like to make it big while the details recovered, right? Sharpened. So this problem is is known as Schiphol resolution case. In this work, we try to solve this problem, especially for Schiphol resolution, by using a deep network. Okay, how can you solve this? Existing work for this Schiphol resolution, there is one. It is called SLCNN. Actually, it's been developed by researchers in CUSK and MSRA, and it is the first work and is very representative work that has been first applied the deep learning technique to this Schiphol resolution. It consists of three layers, just only three layers, and the input is the interpolated image. And then output is the same size of the interpolated image while it recovered the detailed missing information. Okay, so this input image is nothing but originally you have a very small one, but you applied very simple bicubic interpolation technique to make it that the same size of the output you want. Okay. And it passes through the this network, and it somehow recover the lost information, high level, high frequency information as well, actually. So it is very shallow network, and because of that, because of the shallowness of the network, it only have very limited effective receptive field or kernel. So actual size of the effective kernel is 13 by 13. Okay, so the result of this system is not that satisfactory. And also, it takes long time to make it converged. It takes usually several days to make it, you know, stable. So our first work, try to solve the problems of this method. Okay. Motivation is like this. The first issue is the small limited size of receptive field or kernel. So how to make the size of effective receptive field large enough for capturing context information? And the second issue is how to make deep CNN converse, reliably, and fast. So for the first issue, the simple idea is to increase the depth of the system, okay? Then eventually, the effective reset field size becomes bigger and bigger. So you have very weak, you will have very weak, you know, depth system. Then the resulting problem would be, you know, how to compose it, how to make it converge. So those two problems are interrelated, actually. So for these two issues, our idea is, for the first issue, for making large kernel, our idea is very simple. Let's make it deep as far as we can, okay? So this we try to design a very deep CNN model. And also, because of the characteristic of this problem, image enhancement problem, so our objective is to recover details of each pixel. So conventional deep network usually uses pooling layer. So pooling layer actually reduces the size of the intermediate layer, right? So that naturally lose the spatial information. So that is not good for this kind of image enhancement or image restoration problem. So we try to keep the size of the layers the same through the start from the end, okay? So we avoid the pooling layers. For the second issue, how to make the deep network converge fast and reliable? We use two ideas. First one is residual learning. And the second one is the adjustable gradient creeping. The first residual learning is simple, as you see. So we have this input, interpolated low resolution image. We'd like to recover this, the same size, but with details, high resolution image, right? So the difference is this one, right? This is nothing but residual image. So you can get this from extracting this from this one, right? So instead of estimating the high resolution image directly, we only estimate this one, residual information, because we already have this one, right? So because this signal is concentrated into feature space or appearance space, right? So you can model it very easily for a very small number of parameters, right? So we try to learn the high resolution image by only estimating the residual information, okay? Just carry the input interpolated low frequency information, just carry it and then just add to the estimated residual and then recover the high resolution image we want. Okay? This is a simple idea. Okay. So this shows some example of that. So this is the high resolution image we want to recover, and this is the input interpolated low resolution image. So the difference looks like this. This is the residual image. Okay, so only learning the difference, residuals, so we can reduce the problem capacity, problem size, and also it enables much faster learning. All right? So second idea, let's see. So this residual representation of the signal and the system, residual system, the similar idea has been appeared in the archive, and also the ResNet, as you know very well, the best paper in the CBPL 2016, it has the almost similar idea. And actually, the paper, archive paper, ResNet has appeared 1 month later than ours. So we can say that similar idea has been appeared at the same time. But we apply this to the low-level image processing, but their method applied to the image classification. All right. And a second approach for the fast convergence is the adjustable clipping. And the idea is quite simple. So in order to prevent the exploding and vanishing gradient problem, so we set certain bound for the gradient range. So and also the bounds is controlled adaptively according to the current running rate, gamma. So by using this kind of simple idea, you can clip if the gradient is greater than the bound, upper bound, and over the gradient becomes below certain lower bound. So by using simple idea, you can prevent gradient exploding and vanishing issues very efficiently. So this technique enables a high learning rate of 10 to the minus 1. And actually, this is the 10 to the 4 times than that of the SRCNN. So it only takes 4 hours compared to the several days of SRCNN. Okay. So this is our overall system architecture. So given a small low-resolution image, you first interpolate it using very simple bicubic interpolation technique, and then just put it into the very deep network like this. And then this input, interpolated input, is just skipped to the final stage here, and then added to the estimated residual information. And then you get the final high-resolution image, right? So this is called residual learning network. Okay. So this whole system consists of 20 convolution layers. So the effective receptive field, the size becomes 41 by 41, very big, compared to the 13 by 13 of the SLCNN. And we have a skip connection. And each layer consists of 64 channels, and we use 3x3 filters for each convolution layer. And also, there's no pooling layers, so no dimensional reduction applied here, right? Right, so this is quite similar to the ResNet idea. So original ResNet idea is not exact because the addition, ReLU was placed after the addition. But recent one, recent modified one, the ReLU, has been moved inside this ResNet. So addition is the final operation here. So it is exactly the same our model. All right. So training is quite straightforward. Given training data set, X and the ground truth Y, we train the residual, and we use the SGD with the moment 0.9. And also, in order to handle multiple scale separation, we train the system with multiple scales of training set jointly. So we train our system with the standard publicly available data set of 291. And the test sets, we used 4 different test sets, set 5, set 14, and V100 on an urban 100 here. So this shows some intermediate test data. So we tested the how residual learning is effective. So in this case, so this brown curve represented the learning curve of the non-residual system. And this blue curve represents the learning curve of the residual network. So clearly you can see that residual network improves a lot, okay? But for different initial settings, you can have, you can see the same, you know, characteristic, okay? And we tested the effect of depths. So by increasing the depths, so for each scale cases, so the performance increases according to the depths. So we tested up to 20. The depths becomes, the final depth becomes 20 here, right? So this shows some example. So by combining multiple scale at the same time for the training, so we can achieve much better result than training each individual scales. Okay, so we combine three different scales data and train at the same time, so we can achieve much better result than the corresponding counterpart of single, you know, training cases. Okay, so even our system learns fractional scale, you know, interpolation, separation as well, like the 2.5 or 3.5 scale, something like that. So it can regress the scale of the output, right? So this shows some quantitative result compared with other state of art. So most for four different cases, our proposed method achieves the best result, and also in the timing, our method is the fastest. Okay. So I show some example. So the leftmost image is the ground truth, and these trees are, this four results are the result of the conventional method, and the last column shows our result. You can see the differences between ours and others. So clearly, we can recover the clean edges of the structures and textures. Okay, this is the result of the scale four. Okay, and here the babies and four man case as well. So our method is especially good for the man-made object images like these structures, the buildings, something like that. So the straight lines are very clear compared with the original one. So it recovers very successfully. This shows another one. So you can see here, this is original and this is the recovery. But other method shows some aliasing probability results. Okay. So another work we tried to apply was that by looking at the BDSL I presented earlier, 20 layers with the same size of, you know, network. It reminds us kind of a recursion. Okay, so in order to how to reduce the total number of parameters or system, because we use the same layers, right? What if we use the same parameters for each layer? Then it's kind of recursion, right? Same system, but we recurse the output to the input many times. So then it will save a lot of parameters of the system, okay? But, so this is kind of our first idea. So this center part, the single system, recurs many times. So this, the first, this network is the embedding network, transforming the image into the feature space. And this is a recursion network, or the inference network. And this is the reconstruction network that maps the feature to the final output image, right? So we used 16 times of recursion here. Okay, so if you unfold it, the system looks like this one. But training this system is very hard. Very hard. So what you have did, what you have done is that we used the skip connection as well here, in order to make the system learns only residual information. Okay, and also we use the intermediate output, and then reconstruct the output image, and then combine all the intermediate output, and then make a weighted sum. It's kind of ensemble, right? So we combine every intermediate output, and then make our final output as kind of weighted sum of intermediate, you know, output. Yeah. So we learn this weight through the system as well. Okay, so by using this technique, so we can make it converge. And if you learn recursions more and more, the performance is getting better and better, right? So we learn this system up to 16 times, 16 recursions. And the effect of the ensemble, so if we ensemble intermediate output, so you can have much better the performances compared with the without ensemble cases, right? So this shows an example as well. So the last one is the output of our new system, and this is the input ground truth. So this system also gives very pleasing output, as you can see here. All right. So this is the image of BB-8 in Star Wars. So this is broad image, right? And then the recovered image like this. All right, so we have two systems here. So comparing those two systems, some data set, DLC and recursive system gives better. But with this system, this test images, the VDSL gives a little better. So the difference is not that big. So it's kind of neck and neck, okay? But still, it's those two outputs are much better than the previous set of arts, all right? So in terms of the performance plot, our two system is very accurate compared with the other existing one. And also, in terms of timing, this is quite fast, all right? So let me summing up. So we propose two different type of neural network system for handling superposition problem. So BDSL and DLCN. Those two systems are very big, very deep, and it uses the residual learning concept. And also DLCN uses the recursive concept, recursive system, and also ensemble learning altogether, end-to-end learning. So both are very fast and very accurate. All right? So thank you very much.